This is Willard Thompson inviting you to join us once more for a visit behind scenes with the men responsible for educational radio, the men who direct the universities of the air. These are the men who formulate policies, who help decide what will be heard and when. And our guests today are Dr. Harry Scornia, radio director of Indiana University, and Dr. Walter Kingson, head of the radio division, theater arts department of the University of California at Los Angeles. Their topic, training students for radio. Dr. Scornia, what program for training of students is used at Indiana University?
During the last year, we revised our program rather completely because of the demand of students for practical training, also because of the demand of the industry for good people. Beginning next fall, we'll have a possibility of majoring in radio. However, we operate like a university rather than as a trade school. The emphasis throughout is on the social sciences, on language, on philosophy, on history, on English. And after accumulating a large number of background courses, it is then and only then possible to take the skills courses in radio. This new curriculum is aimed at providing people who can go into a station and say, yes, I not only have the education, but I have the experience to help run your station and to step into the shoes of anyone who's leaving.
Does that fit in pretty well with the training as you have it at California?
Well, Mr. Thompson, at the University of California at Los Angeles, we have an emphasis in radio, but not a radio major as such. We have a department of theater arts. Theater arts at California includes not only radio, but first of all theater, then motion pictures, and then radio. There we think of motion pictures and radio as extensions of theater, which we consider basic, so that the student takes 2 years, his first 2 years, in theater and his general liberal arts courses, including courses in theater history, theater crafts, and then beginning in his junior year or third year, he begins to major or emphasize radio. But his degree, his Bachelor of Arts, is a degree in theater arts.
And that contrasts pretty definitely with yours then, doesn't it, Dr. Scornia?
Yes, I'd like to say that although we have the possibility of majoring in radio, that is, in concentrating in radio courses, we also have several other possibilities at Indiana University. It is possible to take a considerable number of courses if you are in the business school and are majoring in business. The same is true if you're taking an education degree or are specializing in teaching. We believe that a lot of these people would like to take a combined curriculum or would like to specialize in an area like education, music, journalism, and other fields. So there's a good deal of leeway. The principal thing that we watch, we very specifically limit the number of so-called skills courses. That is, you can't take more than, say, 12 hours of a laboratory course, which is less than one semester, if it were all taken together, of what you might call a skills or laboratory course.
I think, Harry, even though both of us would like to think of ourselves as professional training schools, that is, we'd like to think of our people who graduate as being capable of stepping into a radio station and carrying on, we ought also to emphasize the fact that we are a part of a liberal arts pattern. I believe that's true for you. I'll speak for myself. At UCLA, we think of ourselves, first of all, as an instructional agency within the framework of liberal arts, so that we don't guarantee our students jobs. We say, you're here for a university education, for a liberal education. You're emphasizing theater arts, in this case with an underlining of radio techniques and radio methods. But after you're through with your 4 years, we hope you'll have had a radio education and a liberal arts education. In connection with that, we make a special point of a strong minor. A student may want to emphasize radio in theater arts, but we say now you need a strong minor to accompany this, and we recommend the social sciences so that he has a strong grounding in, let us say, history or psychology or sociology. But generally speaking, we want him to have content along with techniques, along with skills. We think that's important.
I'd like to say that in general, I think throughout the universities in the United States, which do give educational courses in radio, the emphasis is going to have to be on providing a genuine education. Otherwise, we're no better than trade schools. And I think that there are a lot of our students we like to have take radio courses, even though they never will go into radio. It may make them better listeners. They may write intelligent critical letters regarding programs. They may help form listener groups. With a little radio, maybe they will accept the invitation to speak on the radio. And it is only by accepting such invitations that we can exercise the right of free speech, of democratic thought that radio must have if it's going to be a good rather than only a commercial medium.
I was going to ask why you train people for radio, but I think you've covered that pretty completely. In other words, you don't train them simply to become people who will be proficient in the radio field.
That's right. I think in some cases we hope to make people better mothers, better fathers, more stable personalities, better critics of radio. And as they learn more about mass communications, I think they can exert their influence for good through existing organizations like parent-teachers groups, through their own professions, in various ways after they get out of school.
Yes, I'd like to underline that, Mr. Thompson. I sometimes think we don't realize fully how many people have radios, and as the television field develops, we'll have television sets in this country. For example, there are about 85 million radio sets in this country. Oh, there are about 40 million families owning radio, about 95% of all the families in the entire United States. There are about 5.5 million television sets now owned by families in this country. Where we come from, of course, television is a little more popular than it is in the Midwest. In Los Angeles, for example, we have one television set in every 2.8 families. So it's rapidly taking its place. But compare this with another field. For example, take theater, which is another form of entertainment. In a month, as compared with that 85 million and 40 million figure I mentioned for radio, about 500,000 people attend the commercial theater in a peak month in this country. That comparison may be helpful.
Mm-hmm. I think the number of radio stations in this country is now well over 3,000, which is rising so rapidly. I think it's about twice as many as there are newspapers. The number of radio receivers and television receivers in this country is 2 to 3 times the number of bath facilities and indoor toilet facilities, for example, and twice the number of telephones. The size of the industry is very great. It is true, however, that both Dr. Kingston and I are operating in an area which doesn't have a tremendously large market. I think probably not more than about 60,000 people make their living in radio and television together. And as compared to some businesses, various trades, and even some professions, that's a relatively small number. However, it's a very responsible job. We feel that mass communications have a tremendous impact on people, whether they're conscious of it or not. And I think that Dr. Kingston and I only typify the idealism that prevails among the people who feel that through an industry so great, which people listen to, or in the case of television, look at so much, we must be very, very sure that we've gotten the best possible people into the broadcasting end, and that we exert all possible influence for good as educational institutions in making listeners wiser and more critical and better able to judge and exert their influences.
And I believe that the industry, the radio industry, would be most happy to have any changes in radio come through the audiences. Wouldn't you agree there?
Yes, entirely, Mr. Thompson. I think, as Mr. Scorney has suggested, that's one of our jobs. We want, as much as possible, to provide for the industry enlightened personnel, skilled personnel, personnel they will want, and personnel that will help the industry advance and change as the people want it to change. We hope at the same time that many of our people will not necessarily be in the industry, will be leaders in their communities. And because of their special training, we hope, leaders in guiding opinion about radio and television as it develops. Is that what you had in mind?
I think so. And now in this business of educational radio, when do you break off training and become broadcasters, or do you?
Well, I'll talk for myself, and then Mr. Sconia can speak for himself. We don't do too much broadcasting at the University of California at Los Angeles. We have a sort of split setup there. First of all, there are regular university broadcasts done by the Public Relations Department, two regular broadcasts on the 50,000-watt stations in the area. And then we, as a department, do broadcasts for the local schools. We did a series, for example, last year, on human interest stories on the United Nations for youngsters in the public schools of Los Angeles, both in the city and the county, a total of about 800 schools. These are to be pressed and made available for distribution throughout the country. But when we go on the air, we're no longer a training center. I want to emphasize that. As soon as we go on the air, we use the very best people we can and try to do a professional show. Many of these are students, but we're not training them then. They get training in the process, but we don't take second-rate people and say, this is a chance to get some instruction. Now they're on the air with the responsibility to the public.
In our case, the situation is somewhat different. Our entire station operation, as it will be going on the air very soon, is justified on the basis of its being a training center. Therefore, although we might have only 20 or 30 very good people, we make an effort. It's a compromise with quality in a great many cases. We make an effort to bring in as many people as possible in minor roles at first so they can have the experience of getting on the air in some capacity. And it's rather encouraging to watch a person who last year was very poor, who this year is a little better, and who next year, as a matter of fact, is likely to be one of our veterans and very good. And there is something about the actual experience on the air which does develop these people.
Well, then, one other question. Do you think it's all worthwhile? Dr. Kingston.
Well, I hope it is. All of us hope what we do is worthwhile. As I said, I think the chief justification would come, from my point of view, in the fact that we, first of all, emphasize a liberal education, and second, professional skills and techniques, which, as much as any other training in a university, may provide for jobs, but if it doesn't, there's still the liberal education, which does make it worthwhile.
Yes, Dr. Kingston, weren't you here at Illinois some years ago, and aren't you coming back now? How does it look?
Well, now, here's another question entirely, and I'd like, if possible, if we have just a few seconds, to say that 10 years ago, I was here at WILL as chief announcer, and 10 years later now, I've come to the same organization, which has moved since from its old Little Red Schoolhouse plant to Gregory Hall. The building looks much better. The facilities are better. But most of all, the program service has vastly improved. The personnel has improved, I think. And it's a splendid organization. I'm much impressed as I return again after 10 years to see what WILL has done and how much they've advanced.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but time is up. I do want to thank you for your cooperation, and I'd like to remind our listeners to be with us again next week when we present another in this series of visits behind scenes in educational radio, the Universities of the Air. Our guests today were Dr. Harry Sconia, radio director of Indiana University, and Dr. Walter Kingston, head of the radio division, Theater Arts Department of the University of California at Los Angeles. This was a tape-recorded feature of the University of Illinois Radio Service.